In this episode of The Critical Myth, The Critical Myth crew continues with Manhattan, catches up with Defiance, and begin their review of the upcoming fall season. It's episode 482, Words of Defiance.
That's right. We are back with episode 482 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, and I can't think of any nicer guys I'd like to be trapped in a cave with.
This is Gary from Jacksonville, and I got nothing this week, guys.
And I thanks, Edmund? Anyway, do you know something we don't know? Anyhow, we are going to be obviously picking up where we left off with Manhattan, and there are a few other shows that we need to catch up on this week. But first, before we do any of that, I do believe that Edmund needs to give a disclaimer.
Absolutely. As always, we could discuss just about anything that happened in these episodes. So if you haven't seen them, you will be spoiled. Really, guys, there isn't much on at the moment, so some of this stuff's been out for a while, so we really hope you've seen it already.
That's right. We're going to be playing a lot of catch-up here. That being the case, we are also still catching up and coming up to date on Manhattan. So we had one more episode we were going to talk about, and Gary, if you could do the recap here.
Sure, I'll be glad to. Hold on, let me take a breath. We're talking about Manhattan, Season 1, Episode 7, The New World. Helen and Charlie deal with a crisis, and Abby embarks on a journey of self-discovery.
Well, that's one way of putting it.
Yeah.
All right, what would you give this one?
I would give it a 7.5.
Okay, and Edmund, how about you?
I'll go with an 8.
Yeah, I would probably go back to an 8 as well. Hey, look at that, an episode of Manhattan where we weren't in lockstep.
Yes.
It's a minor variation, but it is a variation. All right, Edmund, why don't you go ahead and get us started here?
Certainly. So yeah, this was with Helen and Charlie. We were basically finishing up their little troubleshooting gig over at Oak Ridge. There was actually one element of both this episode and the previous episode that with the black physicist who, of course, especially being in the southern states, was basically being treated as an errand boy and not having his concerns about the way they were running things paid any attention to whatsoever. I was rather pleased with the way they were handling that whole subplot compared to some of what's been going on Masters of Sex, where I mentioned last week that they've been a little clumsy and in the way they've been injecting race relations into that show, and it was nice to see it handled a little bit better over here. On the home front, certainly what we can call the home front, or back at Los Alamos, or at least where they're all forced to live now. There are a couple of things, the sort of growing jealousy of Charlie's wife, as she kept getting these little hints about who it was who he was actually on this trip with, and of course, you know, it was sort of elements that I think could wind up being slightly soapy, but I thought it was reasonably well handled, even if part of it was the classic, of course, the husband not being completely truthful, which is just making things look even far worse than they actually were. Although, as Gary mentioned last time about the previous episode, you know, not that there wasn't certainly chemistry going on, so his wife may have some reason to be concerned, especially since certainly in terms of intellect and interests, Helen and Charlie do have more in common, although certainly, you know, he does seem to be very much in love with his wife. So you know, but it's more there. You know, I think they are setting up some of the more mature relationship issues pretty nicely in the end. But
I would definitely agree with that. The thing about this episode is that I think it kind of stepped away from the strength of the drama, the compelling side of it that was in the previous episode, which was really kind of part one, and this being kind of part two. It's an unofficial duology, if nothing else. But this, there's been so many hints across the way that there's a very libertine attitude underneath the surface of what's going on at Los Alamos, and certainly among the singles. Like they were saying, you know, the phone operators and everything else, and the nurses basically prostitute themselves out. And everybody just kind of accepts it. There's no real negativity taken to it. It's almost like, sure, why not? And so, of course, there's also the inevitable adulterous activities that then are possibly taking place and certainly taking place. And so Abby kind of gets a look at a very different side of Los Alamos. And I can't exactly blame any of the guys for making their move, because if it was Stars, I think we would have seen a lot more of Abby. We saw quite a bit as it was. But we also know that Abby is not exactly a cold-blooded wife. she's had some relations with her husband, and she's kind of learning a lot about what Los Alamos is all about. She's been kind of having her eyes open throughout. And like you said, I think that Helen has always been shown as somebody who's been very frank and open about just not being afraid to make a move. And I think that that's something that has the potential for being problematic if things progress the way that they are. And I think it's all kind of really underscored by Frank's daughter.
Yeah.
And wow, talk about making herself known. She's kind of been in the background, but she's awfully kind of what's the word for it for someone who's supposed to be that age? I mean, she's kind of very mature in her approach, shall we say. She doesn't act like a teenager or even a young, you know, 20s. She acts like somebody who's been around the block a few times and knows how to get attention. And yet, obviously, she's not supposed to really be that way. It's more that she has really nothing else to do.
Mm-hmm.
She's trapped, which is an interesting thing. It's one thing when it's a grown man and or wife or men and women, but children in Los Alamos, in this, you know, it's like there is nothing for them. And yeah, it's a very interesting thing to explore.
Yeah, and I think it's something you hear about. I mean, in terms of during the war, with that sense of impending doom, and who knows how long we're going to be around, even in a situation like this, you know, you get that sense of how it sort of permeates society of no, better get your experiences in while you can, because you don't know what's going to happen next. Because I think certainly with both Frank's daughter and with the young private, you get a little bit of that sense from both of them that they better grab what they can while it's available, basically.
It's a good point, and I think maybe it also is a reflection of. I don't know if this is really the right time period, because I mean, during the war, a lot of things would have been amplified, but 40s, 50s, you know, there's this kind of idealized vision that we have of the family unit during those times, definitely in the 50s, but even in the 40s, I would imagine. But of course, what we all know is that all the things that came out and were so visible in the 60s, and onward, it's not like they just came out of nowhere. It's the stuff that was happening beneath the veneer all the time. And of course, like you said, in wartime, you've got more of an impetus to say, well, if I don't do something today, I may not have the chance to do it tomorrow. And so, yeah, it's that unspoken, yes, we all know this is going on. but we are not going to talk about it.
Well, I guess that's Frank's idea with the with seeing the maid as well.
Yes.
Yes.
Sure. And, just to draw a little bit back to, you know, non-philosophical discussions, you know, I found that to be a very interesting and powerful scene, especially for the look on his wife's face as she was giving Frank a hug in the moment of her grief. And I think they both realized that that was a little too long and yeah. a little too hard. And I felt very uncomfortable almost as much as Frank did.
Yeah, just a little bit. Let's see. So, Gary, what else would you say about this episode? I mean, we're kind of focusing on the fact that the relationships were such a huge factor in this episode and that that was part of why it kind of dropped a bit. But any other thoughts on it?
No, I agree with you. It really was a 2-hour episode. It wasn't 2 1-hour episodes. I don't have any problem with saying this, you know, basically just drew on with from the other ones. I'm a little surprised of Charlie's wife, the extent she's going to. I don't feel that I had enough build up. You know, we had a sense that, you know, she was a little unhappy, but I think everybody at Los Alamos is. The steps that she seemed to go to in this episode, I just wish there was more build up. I know there was some, but it just didn't seem enough for me.
Yeah, well, I know. Well, one thing that I found a little surprising was that in terms of sort of the potential conflicts and affairs that were going on, I actually thought they did a rather nice misdirection of where Abby's companion. There had been those earlier scenes of her seeing Abby and Charlie, being very intimate and boisterous and affectionate, and sort of getting that sense that, yeah, if there's going to be any danger to the marriage, it would be coming from her. But then, kind of the way they did with Babbitt's homosexuality, of no, then introducing it that, oh no, apparently she may have been just as interested, if not more interested, in Abby than she was in Charlie. So, but again, doing it with a fair amount of subtlety and not hitting us over the head with it, just letting the conclusions get drawn based on just a few hints.
So have we said everything that we wanted to say?
Yes.
Everything that we're allowed to say, yes.
That's right. Well, that being the case, let's see, who was the one who chose last time? I guess that was Gary, right?
Yes.
All right, Edmund, you're up.
Well, let's see. I guess we need to delve into we're going to have to cram them all together just like Sci-Fi did on the schedule and deal with Defiance.
Yes, indeed. And maybe one word to use for at least a couple of these episodes.
Yeah.
Deal. Yeah, there's 4 episodes here between where we left off and where we have the finale. So let's go ahead with the first promo.
It's beginning.
This Thursday. Catch 2 all-new episodes of Defiance back-to-back.
We can do it the easy way, or we can do it the hard way. Your choice.
The most we can hope for is that what we want is worth the evil we do. No!
Defiance, all-new Thursday starting at 8, only on Sci-Fi.
All right, and if you could do the recap, please.
Absolutely. We have, first up, Defiance Season 3, Episode 10, Bottom of the World. A deadly mine collapse leaves Amanda and Pottinger trapped, and it's a race against the clock for Nolan and Rafe to save them.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And what would you give this one, do you think?
I will give this one a 6.5.
Mm-hmm. And Gary, did you watch this one?
No, I cheated and read the back of the book and watched the final episode. I'll catch up with you at that point.
Okay.
That's fine. You may feel better about that after we talk about at least this one. I give this one a 6.5 as well.
Yeah.
Well, why would you have given this one a 6.5?
The biggest issue for me was certainly the situation was an extremely stock one, having this, we had our favorite villainous E-Rep return, which did add, I guess, a little bit of spice to the beginning of the episode, but then this whole explosion in the mine, which does take her out. So the character who was providing some interest is out of the picture, and then leaving Amanda and Pottinger trapped. And really, my biggest issues with the stuff going on this season, and actually kind of in contrast when we're talking about Manhattan and how well they're doing in presenting these different relationships and shifting permutations and things, is the actual kind of love lives of the characters on Defiance have just been leaving me completely cold. The shifting of Amanda's with Nolan, then she's with Pottinger, and it just seemed completely just for plot reasons. So then having this whole episode where it's all revolving around the two of them trapped together and we're working out their relationship, didn't really do much for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it really, my review came down to essentially the same thing. The whole Pottinger thing with Amanda doesn't make a whole lot of sense. It felt forced for her to just turn to him because of this near-death situation that, I would say right now, if people get trapped underground, that at least some of them would assume, well, clearly we're going to get rescued because that's how the plot always works. But... really, it's just, I don't know, the it was so just rote,
yeah,
throughout. And then for Berlin to get all up in Nolan's face about his concern for Amanda, and it was clearly not one of the better episodes of Defiance. And unfortunately, it was just continuing along this mid-season rut that they've been in, where they're obviously trying to hold off on paying off the plot lines just yet, and so they're doing these side threads, and it's not as egregious as the whole Kenya thing turned out to be, but it is still not the best thing in the world, that's for sure. Obviously a little bit below average in our opinion.
Yep.
But I think that maybe we have more to say about the next three episodes. And if you could do the recap, please.
Absolutely. Season 3, episode 11, Doll Parts. Nolan searches for Orisa, leaving Amanda to take on the deputy's badge, just as a shocking murder rocks Defiance.
Okie dokie. A lot of passion in that one. Yes, okay, so what would you give this episode?
I'll give this one a 7.5.
Okay, and I gave it an 8, so not appreciably different, but obviously a step in the right direction, the best score that we've given an episode in 5 episodes. So, that's saying something.
Yeah.
I'll just say for myself, the reason that I gave this an 8, which was a big step up from the last couple, was that we finally got some movement on some plot threads.
Yes.
That alone was good. I really liked Amanda having to step up and do something different. Nolan and his confrontation with Orisa was good.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, just in general, it was nice to see things moving along the way that they should. And Christy.
Yeah.
Okay, I kind of really like that character right now. She learned a lot of good things from Stama.
Yeah, so certainly the whole mystery of the how she wound up tumbling from the arch, and I'm throughout the season. You know, the last episode I was saying, relationship revolving doors have left me completely cold, but certainly just about everything happening in the Tar household has been the most fun. Daytek and Stom having to go through, it's like, oh, well, no, I assume you killed her. No, I thought you killed her. and even Alex is a strong suspect, and then to have it turn out to be Christy, and only thing I think would have made it even better is if rather than being somewhat accidental, it really had been Christy sort of stepping up to take care of the problem herself and become a fully fledged member of the family. But that maybe would have been a little too much development too quick, but certainly it's been very, very interesting to see Christy go from this odd cosplay clubbing to really accepting being a member of the family.
Yeah, I mean, it was very sketchy the way that they did her character arc. I mean, it just didn't work the way that they clearly thought that it would. But if you look at the major beats of it, it is a progression, right? At the beginning of the season, I remember that scene with Stama and her and Alec in the bath.
Yeah.
And Stama's sitting reaching there with, you know, basically as much skin possible to show on Sci-Fi available. Christy looking like, oh, this is the most awkward thing in the world. To Christy trying to kind of be a cast of thin on the level of Stama and clearly invoking her as a role model, but still playing at being cast of thin, not actually being really, you know, a part of that culture. To in this episode, by the end, she's the one in the bath, mm-hmm. basically telling Alec the way that it's supposed to be. That now. Get in the bath, husband. Mm-hmm. A wife is not supposed to be in the bath on her own. And you just see the look on his face like, oh my.
Yes.
I chose well.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was just really good to see the character kind of come into her own. And quite frankly, the victim in this case was someone who rightfully deserved to die horribly.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it worked out pretty well from my perspective. Yeah, I mean, this to me was kind of the show after this skid getting back where it belonged. The kind of dip that it took roughly around slashing towards Bethlehem,
mm-hmm.
appropriately enough, is finally kind of ending, and they're getting back to where they belong. And that leads me into, unless there's anything more you wanted to say about this one?
No.
Okay, that leads me into the next episode. So here's this promo.
This Thursday on the 2-hour Defiance season finale.
There's an extremely powerful sentient computer that intends to destroy the planet. Do you know what you've done?
I love you, baby girl.
Defiance season finale, Thursday starting at 8. Only.
Okay, and that would be Defiance, Season 3, Episode 12, All Things Must Pass. Nolan races to save Tommy's life and stop Arisa. Tensions between Amanda and Stama lead to a showdown. Okay. Well, first of all, what would you give this one?
I will give this one an 8.5.
Okay. And I give it a 9.
Ooh.
So, my reasoning behind that. This did not get a 9 because of necessarily the narrative content of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
It was very nice of them to go ahead and finally start digging into the backstory that has been driving things for the last two seasons.
Yeah.
It was really nice of them to do that. Everything was kind of brought into focus. But in that respect, it was definitely a prelude to the actual finale. What impressed me about this episode was the direction, the cinematography, the editing, the score. Basically, this one got a lot of points for presentation from me. This was just a hauntingly good episode in terms of those elements. It didn't have a lot of story to tell. It had a lot of exposition to go through, but it found a way to do the exposition in a way that was actually just compelling to watch. And that's kind of what I took out of the episode. I was quite stunned, especially given some of the clunky things we've seen this season, that they managed to put an episode together and package it so well. But that was kind of my take and why I really felt like this was the best episode they've done all season, and maybe even was one of the best episodes of the series.
Yeah, definitely. It was nice to see them finally bring some of these things together so that, you did get a sense of they did know where they were going, even though that wasn't quite certain. I can't add too much more in terms of the overall feel of the episode. It was just a put together just much better than I think you're right. And anything else we've seen this season. In terms of some of the practicalities, I mean, also, you know, I don't think it hurt, having, Linda Hamilton come in, as Pilar and, the long lost mother for, And and certainly after we had just seen Christy seeming to come into her own, to have her mother come back and throw away this potential wrench in the works. I thought that was that was actually handled rather well. It was just the way things were pushed forward, and certainly that, I mean, just that whole element of Nolan and that whole incredible quest basically to bring Tommy home, which I know we hadn't really touched on from the previous episode, but I was able to forgive the way they pushed that element forward, the whole convenient thing of like, oh, okay, yes, Tommy's been taken into the collective and then just happens to magically reject the implant. So as to sort of drive things forward, but then the way it got resolved with Arissa basically taking him out, and then Nolan having to pull this wilderness survival routine to get him back was, you know, what was just a very tense and well written element, as those sort of talks with the dying guy as you're trying to keep him awake and bring him back can be rather cliched, but this one really worked.
Well, I think it worked because it didn't end up the way that it usually does.
Yeah.
Usually you talk with him in order to keep him alive long enough to get him home and save his life. I thought that part of the lyrical side of this whole thing was that Tommy's dying moments were triggering the narrative flashbacks that were needed to kind of bring closure to his character. And just that wonderful feeling of all that effort being spent bring him home to save his life was really just to give him a proper goodbye. It was a really nice touch on the part of the writers to be like, no, we're not going to give false hope. It was the exact opposite of the cliche of the two characters trapped in the cave.
Yeah.
You know, in this case, it was really this long journey into the abyss for Tommy, and Nolan being the kind of the ferryman on the river, so to speak. There were a lot of nice allegories taking place in this episode, and you could kind of see how that kind of microcosm of storytelling was also being reflected in the whole idea of why this is all happening the way that it's happening with the Votans and everything else. That it all was part of a whole, and that's what I liked about it, is that yes, there wasn't a whole lot going on, but what was going on had deep resonance within the episode, but for the whole series. It was like, if this series is coming to an end, which I don't think that it is, but this is bringing a chapter of the entire series to a close. And so it felt appropriate that it would do so, at least in this kind of cohesive a manner. That said, we can now go ahead and move on to the actual season finale. And Gary, why don't you do this one?
Absolutely. We're talking about Defiance, season 3, episode 12. No, wait, episode 13. I Almost Prayed. Season 2 comes to a close with Nolan fighting both the Earth Republic and old acquaintances to stop Arissa's destructive plan from becoming a reality. He's also determined to save his adoptive daughter from the Kaziri forces that have been possessing her before his own friends attempt to kill her.
Mm-hmm. And what would you give this one?
I would give it an 8.5.
Okay. And Edmund, how about you?
I'll go with an 8.
Okay. And I gave it an 8 as well. Okay. Gary, why don't you go ahead? I mean, we've been talking quite a bit about the episodes leading up to this, but...
Oh, absolutely. And maybe I haven't been straddled with as much of them as you guys have, so perhaps that helps to account for my higher score. But anyway, we have this... Basically, the big issue is that... Arissa is destroying the planet, destroying the world. We've already seen cities go by the wayside at this point. She pretty much nuked New York City. And now it seems like it's getting ready to happen all over the world, that she's able to activate just about every ship that's up in space. And if they're still able to fly and be directed around, why are they just sitting up there? But that's a whole nother story for another season, I suppose. But anyway, so as Arissa starts to do this, they, Nolan's trying to drastically go after her. Meanwhile, everyone else wants to kill Arissa, but he's convinced that he can talk her out of it and he can turn the situation around, and he's not willing to give up on his daughter. And while, you know, he's always used that term and we've seen bits and pieces of it here or there, the lengths that he goes to in this episode to try and save her really cement that relationship for me in a way that I don't think I'd quite – accepted it beforehand. So I have to say they really did a good job with that. The special effects, while not 100%, were still, I thought, very good. I enjoyed all, you know, the ship activations, the beacons coming up around the planet. It all seemed to mesh very well for me. Did you guys have a favorite part? I know they brought in the boy whose name escapes me to work with Arissa or to join or share, or I guess I missed a little bit too much to quite grasp what the significance of that was. But I thought in the end everything worked out well. Did you guys – I mean, you guys only gave it an 8. What stopped you from going up higher on it?
Well, I think for me what was the factor there is that the previous episode for me was so strong that the – more conventional storytelling in the finale was a bit of a letdown. Not a huge letdown, because clearly an 8's not a bad score, but it wasn't nearly as compelling to me, because it kind of had to go back to the conventions of a season finale in terms of bringing the arcs to a close, setting up cliffhangers, and so on. The other side of it was that, and Gary, you kind of bring this up more often than I do, but I got the sense that the whole destruction of New York, that was practically ripped out of the game. I don't know if it was, but the special effects looked like it was a pre-rendered scene from a game, not something for the show, and that it was kind of the writers taking the concept of what happened to New York in the game, maybe, and wrapping the whole Arissa thing around it. And, you know, because they did say that they were trying to kind of converge the two more often this season. And that's just the sense that I got, was that they used an event in the game as a kind of prelude or a way to demonstrate the threat to Defiance in the show. And it just looked bad to me. Where other things in the show looked far better. So it's almost like they didn't make that. The people who made the game made that. That's kind of the thought that I had. I don't get the feeling that they wrote this as a series finale. But I feel like with just a couple minor exceptions, like the TARS going after Christy and all of that, and then Nolan and Arissa in the cocoon, trapped underground, there's really not a whole lot that's left up in the air.
Mm-hmm.
You could kind of wrap it up there if you wanted to. It wouldn't necessarily be entirely satisfying, but they wrapped so much up in the previous episode that it's like this was the end game for everything. I mean, certainly one of the highlights for me that took it from being a real, more of an average episode, I loved the interaction between Stama and Daytac. Their new paradigm hopefully will stick.
Yes.
I'm hoping Daytac doesn't turn around on this, because, oh, it's so much fun watching her be the brains and him be the brawn.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, to your one of your points, John. I mean, for those of us who did watch it as scheduled, I think this was a case of where putting the episodes together didn't necessarily serve them that well, because I did get that sense of. Yeah, the reason why I was downgrading it was just my feeling of those two episodes was that penultimate episode felt really strong, and then in comparison, this one did not didn't quite hold up to it. And if they had been scheduled conventionally with the week apart, might not have had quite as much of a sense of that. The whole thing with New York, I mean, just went back to the same problem with the whole terrorist episode and the bomb threatening New York. And the problem is just we've had absolutely no connection with New York other than, oh, that's where that's where the all the E-reps are headquartered and come from, and they're all people who we don't really like very much, so why should we care? Because there was this strange sense of, you know, okay, you're showing the destruction of New York, and I'm not really feeling that it's that big a deal, because it's not Defiance.
Well, right, and that was part of the thing of me saying that it looked like pre-rendered footage for a game, is that it was so disconnected from everything that I felt like I was just watching a really pretty CGI, you know, cutscene. There was no resonant. There was nothing there to make me care about what was happening until the threat was to Defiance.
Yeah.
But that's more a problem of previous world building than it was specifically this episode. So, I mean, Gary, I mean, what are your thoughts on some of these other elements? Like, for instance, the TARS and that whole idea of Christy and Alec being fooled into thinking that there was the grass being greener, perhaps, at another site.
Oh, I don't know. It seems to me like they've been downplaying that whole side of the storyline for a little while now. And while you're enjoying the flip and interchange, I don't care for it as much. I enjoyed when the roles were back where we started again. So I'm not that thrilled with the whole thing. I like Day Tech as a sort of as the boss type of guy. It worked better for me. I know when I did get to actually see him at Dragon Con. He came across. I would have liked to see him be that strong guy again. He seems like that way in person. So it's almost like he's playing against character to do something like that. I see what you're saying about the whole. It really, in a lot of ways, they did wrap everything up. You know, a large part of this whole series has been this, the Orisa mystery. Now that we've had that sort of fleshed out and everything's, you know, come to term with it, I'm not sure where they're going to go to next. It was always that sort of overarching question to everything. And now that we know, it's curious to see where they'll go with the series.
Exactly. What are your thoughts on that, Edmund? Where do you think they're going from here?
I think they're waiting till they hear about a pickup, and then they'll figure it out. but yeah, certainly the that whole ending with the presumption of Orisa Nolan being dead, but then, you know, you're seeing that yes of course they managed to get either manage themselves or were somehow picked up by the protective pods. Did just seem like a nice convenient. Yes, we're going to wrap this up and give ourselves lots of options for when we come back. And well, then and with this writing team, I get the impression that it is more that they'll just reconvene and just start throwing ideas around.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, if I were to try and guess anything out of this or speculate, I would have to say that so much has been about Votan lore up to this point, and they've only really had this idea of Christy and her pregnancy and how it may be affecting her as a bit of a subplot. It would make sense that if it's more about thematically humans and Votans having to find a way to live together, that it would make sense to introduce another aspect of how they are not particularly getting along right now. Perhaps this camp, mm-hmm. or whatever is, I would think that's got to be a big part of wherever they go and what they introduce here. So it's probably hard to really get into where they could go, but that's partially because they've left so little open-ended. Mm-hmm. So like you said, yeah, it's probably going to come down to them getting the firm pickup and then figuring out from there where to go.
Yeah, but certainly one of the most interesting elements, and yes, apparently, I think you and me, John, were having more fun with this than Gary might have been, but with that whole shift within the Tara family and that whole sense of Stama picking up on some more human attitudes in terms of the roles of females and whether the, you know, what sort of responsibilities she can or should take on. There's certainly that element of melding of alien and human attitudes that they could play on.
And as far as that camp goes, I mean, as cheesy as it would have been, I mean, the fact it was Linda Hamilton, I really wanted her at some point to say, you know, come with me if you want to live. She just, it's like they just seem to, you know, you keep edging towards that. And I was like, oh, come on, just say it. Go all the way.
They're saving it for next season, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or maybe a presentation when the show has to get renewed or something along those lines. Who knows? Yeah, so let's see here. That's it for the major shows that we are currently following. We do have a little bit of time here.
Mm-hmm.
Pause it if you don't mind.
And go ahead.
All right, so before we get into any of the quick hits, I think that I'm not exactly sure what our schedule is through the rest of the month, so I figure now would be a good time as any if we collectively go on over to our friends at the Futon Critic and do a little quick and dirty fall preview. Yes, I know. I like to change things up a little bit.
That's not in the notes, Jeff.
I know, it's not in the...
Yes, and Google has thrown its own Audible. Well, apparently Google got confused by your Audible as well. So, yes, we briefly disconnected, but we are back, or I am back.
All right, then. Well, as I said, starting with Monday, then, let's talk about the network shows here. We have, I know that there are some people that are interested in this, Scorpion. There's been a lot of promos for this. This would be the ragtag team of ultra-intelligent people led by Robert Patrick as, I guess, their military liaison. I personally am not particularly taken by this, but what do you guys think? Either one of you going to be giving this a shot?
Well, especially given, of course, what it's up against on another network, I think I will be recording it and, possibly, even waiting to see what some of the reaction is before I actually start checking out episodes.
How about you, Gary? Any interest in that one?
Yeah, it won't be my first thing, but I'll record it and give it a shot for maybe probably 2 to 3 episodes and hope.
Yes, yes, I can understand that. I think the shows that we're a lot more interested in would be on Fox this particular evening, and that would be on the same night, the September 22nd, Gotham starts.
Yes.
And then also the second season of Sleepy Hollow coming right after that.
Mm-hmm.
I know those are my first choices for that evening.
Yeah, anyway. Absolutely. Yeah, no question.
Of course, I'm also interested in, instead of recording Scorpion, perhaps I'll be recording the second season of The Originals to see if they can pick up any ground and momentum from their first season, which ended fairly well, but certainly it was an inconsistent season to start with. Anything else on Monday nights as far as the major networks go here?
Well, since I was one of those who was sucked into having a wonderful time with James Spader at 10 o'clock on Mondays with The Blacklist, I will be continuing to have a wonderful time with Red Reddington come September 22nd.
Wow, 22nd of September is going to be a long Monday night for you.
Yes.
All right, let's see. Also on that evening, let's see if as I'm looking down. On Sci-Fi, the 24th of November, we have the miniseries Ascension starts on Monday nights. I'm going to look into that one. I think that it has some potential, especially now that we're seeing some previews for it.
Yeah, I like the premise of it. I'm hoping they do it justice. We'll see.
Yep. That's the only thing that really pops out to me from the cable side of things. But again, with so much on the regular networks, I suppose there's not a lot of need for additional stuff on cable. So then moving on to Tuesdays. I hate to say it, but Karen Gillan.
Yes.
She might bring me to Selfie. Yes. I hate the name of that show, but I could watch her read the phone book. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, although I guess to be is, doing a hip modern take on Pygmalion, what gets to me is I don't quite see how you do a series out of it. But.
Yeah, I completely understand that.
But as you say, I will still be recording it. So.
If only to look at the pretty.
Yes.
All right.
It's not a show we usually watch, but Scott Bakula is going to be in NCIS New Orleans.
That's true. That's true.
Yep.
for us vernacular people.
Yeah, you know, I'm not a big fan of where NCIS has gone in its latter years and the franchise in general. I certainly was a fan early on, and I think I just got tired of the rote, you know, storytelling that it kind of fell into. But there's, like you said, there's, you know, Scott Bakula has a certain presence to him, and I'd be interested in what they think a spin on NCIS in New Orleans would really bring to the table. So I might check it out if there's, you know, a rerun here or there. Because right in the same time slot,
yeah.
I'm sorry, there's a lot of other things that are much higher on my list, such as Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Agent Carter.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, that wins. Also in that same time slot on the CW is, of course, Supernatural.
Yeah.
Come on. It's going to be hard for me to figure out which one of those two I'm going to watch and which one I'm going to record. It might be, given the inconsistency of Supernatural last season... what I record. So
yeah, I think definitely. Yeah, kind of coming out of their season finales, it's I think Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is the one that would be number one on my list, and then DVR Supernatural.
Yeah, let's see. Trying to kind of get back to the beginning of it on ABC at 10 o'clock. There's a new show called Forever. I had some interest in it based on the description, and then I started seeing some of the early reactions to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in conflict with another show that's at the top of my list.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm going to favor it. I don't even know if it'll end up on my DVR list, unfortunately. It feels a bit derivative. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, it's funny, John. I didn't realize you were that committed to Tosh.0.
Yeah, that's not it. Person of interest, however. come on, Tuesday nights are packed. We know
yes.
This. This is the same way it was last year.
Yep.
What we've got is on the CW, The Flash is opening up the evening. Then we've got Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Supernatural, and then Person of Interest.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really need a whole lot else.
No.
And I don't know. I've seen The Flash pilot already, so I'm already more than happy to say that I'm going to tune in every week.
Yeah, definitely.
On cable... I'm looking down. I know that there are some people that are fans of Sons of Anarchy, which has actually already started back up. Henry gave us a review up on the VOG Network site, so go ahead and take a look at that if you're interested. Let's see. I'm scrolling down. I'm looking for a show in particular and not seeing it.
Uh-oh.
You guys see anything else on Tuesdays? I mean, Face Off is still going, but that's going to end up soon.
Yeah. Yeah, and I know it's actually been on since July, and one of my issues has been because I don't actually have El Rey Network, but that Matador series about a soccer star who becomes a spy, I've just been hearing very hilarious stuff about in terms of, you know, this may be one to track down once its run ends, because it apparently is one of those shows that's deliriously over the top and knows knows that it's supposed to be silly and is completely embracing it. So,
is this the one that's based? Is this a what's the name? Richard Rodriguez?
He's it seems like he's behind all the major stuff on the network. Yeah.
Yes, but it's got Roberto Archie is also involved in it. As he seems to be involved with everything these days.
Actually, I'm just checking notes. Alfred Molina, Elizabeth Pena, Gabriel Luna.
Well, that's the cast. I was talking about the showrunner type of side of things.
Yeah.
Or at least...
It's Kurtzman and Orsi.
Yeah. Well, you know, they're not a duo anymore. They no longer work together, so...
Really? Oh, okay. Okay, yeah. Well...
Interesting, because they've been a writing team for years. But now they have kind of separated for whatever reason. But at any rate, whatever the case, I've heard a few things about that too. But I guess I was kind of thinking that it was a takeoff of the Mexican and the Robert Rodriguez films that were kind of along those lines. But it sounds like maybe it's its own little wacky.
Yeah, no, I'm just looking at the actual, yeah, so it's this guy, Tony Matador Bravo, a professional soccer player who's known as much for his antics off the field as his moves on it, but what his fans and family don't realize is that it's actually all a cover and he's a covert operative for the CIA, so, you know.
Of course he is.
The name itself.
Yes.
Tony Matador Bravo.
Yes.
Oh, I'm having flashbacks to the Brady Bunch. Okay. All right. Well, we're going to go ahead then and take a quick break on our rundown here and wrap up this episode and then pick up where we left off next time.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google+, under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the critical myth.